Holmes in Macedonia, he's writing this letter to a young man named Timothy, who was in Ephesus. Timothy was one of the supporters and of his entourage as they were traveling and established preaching and churching. And he left, and Paul recognized that there were problems. In Ephesus, there were going to be problems. And so he's writing this letter to Timothy, and he is giving some instructions and warnings to Timothy about some of this. And in chapter 1, verse 3, he writes to Timothy, charge certain persons not to teach any other doctrine. And then Paul changes pace a little bit, and he leads us into a more detailed discussion of things like false teachings and remembering again the verse we just mentioned, 1 Timothy 1:3. These false teachers were arising and were teaching some ideals such as denying marriage. You see this today, don't you, in some religions, predominantly Catholic, still teach that type of thing, and abstaining from certain foods. I found that this, in studying this, it's called asceticism. Boy, what a word, huh? But it means rejection of worldly comforts in an effort to come and become more spiritual. You know, I was watching a History Channel and some time ago, and they were talking about people who were so adamant about their beliefs, and they wanted to deny themselves comfort. And so they actually had themselves walled in this monastery, and there was just a little opening for them to get their food and water and whatever they needed. And they spent their life in behind that bricked in the wall, denying themselves the comfort because of their, they wanted to suffer for Jesus. Now I can appreciate their sincerity. That's really dumb. And yet people still, you know, to this day, deny themselves. We have a monastery up here on Bailey Hill Road. What is that? Little creek back up over the hill there, Burns. And there's a monastery for women up there. And they closed them off, themselves off from society. I had a boss years ago that I worked for, and he took food up there. He lived not too far down the hill. And they had a little dumbwaiter that they would lower down. He could put some stuff in there, and then they would raise it back up and never see that boss of mine, never talk to him. They just sequestered themselves. Yeah. So they're denying themselves. There's a bunch of nuns that did this, and they just denied themselves part of the outside world. And so it is happening around us today. Now, scholars denying certain foods, abstaining from certain foods, and denying marriage and whatnot. Some scholars, and I always put a question mark behind that when I talk about scholars. because they're just regular people like we are, and yet they have voiced their opinion in a great degree sometimes, and they're fallible. So they make mistakes. But scholars have gone back and actually placed this practice all the way back to the first century. Well, that's what we're talking about now. And they, here in Ephesus, first century, and they're doing it there. Well, I think that this this denying of particular foods, remember, and we're still affected by it today. Some of these things that were promoted by the Catholic Church. No meat Fridays. Do you remember that? Fish only. So Friday became Fish Day because of this Catholic practice. Well, it really wasn't even promoted, well, it was eventually promoted by them, but originally it was just an excuse to eat something instead of just grain and vegetables. And so they, a few people added the fish in there on Friday. And this was to honor Christ's death. That was the idea behind it on Fridays. And we're still affected with that today. Friday's Fish Day. And we still see that in some areas. I don't know if it's practiced by the Catholics anymore, but it's still practiced today. I'm sure that some of these laws, like abstaining from certain foods, probably had to do with the Jews here in Ephesus trying to pass on and add the old Mosaic law, which of course banned a lot of food that the Jews were able to eat. A lot of them were considered unclean. Swine, pigs, hog, considered unclean. Bats, fish that didn't have any scales. And there were a lot of things. We can go back to Leviticus, the 11th chapter, and we can see a list of things that they were not to eat and sometimes not even to touch, made them unclean, and they had to go through this ritual to get clean again. So these false teachings came from people, and it very well may have been the Judaizers that were there, people trying to teach the law. In fact, I told earlier in 1 Timothy that these people were trying to teach the old law and incorporate the old law into their lesson, their teaching, when they really didn't know that much about it to begin with. And so this pair of warnings, beware of false teachers, sets the stage for Paul's message here in 1 Timothy, the 4th chapter. Now, as we get into this today, we want to kind of make a note to remind you to study a little bit about chapter 5 and chapter 6. And this will, these last two chapters will provide a means for Timothy and us today to identify and avoid certain errors. In question 1, verse 1, says the Spirit says certain people will start teaching false doctrines. They will fall away from following the truth, following demons and deceitful spirits. What does he mean by that?
They'll depart from the faith.
I'm sorry.
They'll depart from the faith of God and believe falsehood.
Okay. Anybody else? What does he mean by that? What are these demons and false spirits, deceitful spirits? What's that? David, you
know? Well, I think we have to remember that right now, Timothy's dealing with a group of people that are either of Jewish background or Gentile background. So the Jewish background, they're going to revert to their Jewish tendencies. They're going to try to push that stuff in. The Gentiles, on the other hand, you've got people that are coming out of paganistic religions that were serving false gods and doing all these other things and involved in a lot of activity that would not be okay in the church. And so in the later times, as we progress as a church, that stuff's going to start creeping in. And I think that we have to be careful of that. You know, we don't have Jews and Gentiles here, but we have Baptist, Catholics, whatever, that have come together to become Christians. And we can start trying to bring in those types of tendencies.
Yeah, this is practiced greatly today. This was, even though it was written a couple thousand years ago, this is just as important today as it was then. And I think this was intended for our benefit. We need to watch this closely. We see it happening all around us, both teachings. Well, you know, it's okay to do this. Doesn't say you can't do that. You ever hear that? Mm-hmm. That's pretty common statement. Well, it doesn't say we can't do that, so it must be okay. You see that even in the church today. You see that problem cropping up, and it ends up splitting up congregations. And so we have to really, really be careful to avoid running across stuff like this and allowing it to happen. Okay, question number two. What's meant by verse 3? Let me read that for you. They tell people that's wrong to marry. And they tell people that there are some foods that must not be eaten. We just touched base on that, didn't we? I probably got ahead of myself a little bit on my comments section there before we got started, and I kind of clutched a little bit. So, but this is, but the, you know, some of them do that. Forbidden to marry, forbidden to eat certain foods. Is that effective for us today? What's the response to that today? Forbidding to eat certain foods. Can I get somebody to read the scripture for us? Mark 7, 15 through 18. Mark 7, 15 through 18. And this is Mark writing down what Jesus has spoken about.
Mark 7, 15?
7, 15 through 18.
Great. There's nothing outside the man which going into him can defile him, but the things which proceed out of the man are what defile the man. If any man has ears to hear, let him hear. And when leaving the multitude, he had entered the house. His disciples questioned him about the parable. And he said to them, "Are you so lacking in understanding also? Do you not understand that whatever goes into the man from outside cannot defile him? Because it does not go into his heart, but into his stomach, and is eliminated. Thus he declared all foods clean."
Okay, this is Jesus talking. Mark recorded this. Says that whatever goes into your mouth goes into your stomach. And what's he saying about the heart? What goes into your heart, not food, not drink, but what goes into your heart is what counts, what makes the difference. Okay. You know, the Jews had Jesus mentioned that as well, but the Jews had they were fastidious. They had to wash their hands at every opportunity because they were dirty and unhealthy. What did Jesus say about that? He said, a little water doesn't hurt anything, but eating with dirty hands is not a ritual, and it's not that important. Now, I'm almost like the Jews. I want to wash my hands every time I use this stuff on my hands to kill the germs and stuff. But Jesus said it's not that important. But it became a ritual that was required by the Jews. Yes, sure.
Well, I think that the comparison between the two, it's not that the ritual isn't important. It's that the soul is more important than the body. So it's what you're putting into your soul that can affect your entire eternity, whereas what you're putting into your body is a temporary thing. It's in, it's out, it's in, it's out,
Yeah. But it's what's in the heart is what Jesus is talking about that's important. Not even a comparison there, really. What about today? Are we reading on here Jesus saying in Martha that all the food is clean? It's going to have to make any difference. What about today? Are there restrictions placed on us today?
Well, the rest of verse 3 said, God created marriage and good food to be received with thanksgiving by believers of the church.
Okay, is there anything that we're restricted to today? Yes, sir.
Yes, we're not supposed to eat the blood or eat food that's been strangled by things.
Right.
I think those were the two things that when they went to Jerusalem, that they said, no, you don't have to keep the old law, but these things you do.
Yeah, Acts 15 and 29 is the verse that covers that. To abstain from food sacrificed to idols, okay, from blood, and from meat of strangled animals. Now, I don't know how you're going to figure that out. Ask somebody, well, did you strangle those beef? But anyway, this is again where idol worship came into being. We have to remember in Ephesus, it was a town, a huge town, an important byway with a lot of trails and highways coming through there. And so you had all kinds of idol worship, lots of different gods and so forth like this. People coming and going all the time, bringing these strange teachings to this area. I hope I'm not listening too much. I feel like I am. It's kind of bugging me a little bit, but hopefully I'll get this taken care of and all this. So in the meantime, I just have to put up with it. Plus, I lost a tooth. I broke, ate some hard candy, which I hope not to do. So I broke this tooth off. I tell everybody my wife used to be a great tennis player. She had a great backhand. I'll hear about this. What else? What else are we taught to abstain from? Anybody have any idea? Now we just talked about abstaining from idols, food to idols, blood, strangling. What else? Is there anything else that we needed to abstain from?
Sexual immorality.
Shall I?
Sin.
I'm sorry?
Sin. Any kind. Just stay away from that.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Found in Romans 14. And I forgot to write down the specific verse, but it tells us to avoid anything that causes someone else to stumble. Okay? So what we might ordinarily put on the table, what we might ordinarily drink, and actually be comfortable in doing that, if it causes somebody to stumble, what does it say about that? Just to avoid that, doesn't it? And so if you put something in front of someone or offer to do something and it's against their beliefs, if you push that on, then you may cause them to stumble. Now, maybe certain, probably not a sin for us to do that, but if it's a sin for somebody else and they believe that, then that's a problem we have to deal with, isn't it? Absolutely. Question number 4. In verses 7-8, Paul instructs Timothy to discipline himself for what?
Worldly fable.
Okay. Have nothing to do with godless and silly myths. Train yourself in godliness. Then I ask, why? Why was he told to do this? Have nothing to do with godliness or with godless and silly myths. Train yourself in godliness. Why was he told that? Somebody was starting and I interrupted. You know?
Well, I think basically the first part of that is a waste of time. It takes, if we just think about our lives and the silly arguments we get in at work or with brethren over unnecessary things, the amount of time and effort and energy that creates. The brain space that it takes up. We just don't waste our time with it. So worry about, so for Timothy as the preacher, worry about being a godly person and manifest that. Manifest being a godly person. Not a self-righteous person, but a godly person. Spend your time studying what God wants you to do and let's not worry about what they're doing over there, unless it's brought in here. And then he's taught how to, you know, basically squash that stuff if it comes up. But, you know, just quit wasting your time on that nonsense.
You know, we could think about the amount of time that we spend talking about politics around a dinner table, or what are we going to accomplish? How many of us have walked the streets handing out flyers and, you know, for an initiative and just spent all this time when the basic truth of it is, if each and every one of us focused on godliness, focused on living a life where our light shines in this world, we probably wouldn't have to walk around and hand out flyers. We could just ignore that nonsense and walk in the right direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Paul mentioned physical therapy, you know, physical training of some type is of some value. But godliness is the value of every way. That not only holds promise life today, the present day, but also for the life to come, and that's what we're working on, isn't it? Number five, why do we as Christians need to labor and strive? What are we laboring for? What are we striving for?
Our heavenly home.
I'm sorry?
Our heavenly home.
Sure. That's what where our effort should be concentrated, isn't it? Striving to do the very, very best we can and looking forward to a home of the Lord. Yes,
That's addressed in 1 Timothy 1 and verse 15, which it says, it is a trustworthy statement deserving full acceptance that Jesus Christ came into the world to save sinners, among whom I am foremost of all.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's because of Jesus Christ came.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, anybody else? Go ahead, Dave.
Well, I think about laboring and striving as effort. It's work. And, you know, here, just a few years ago, when I had my neck surgery, I didn't use my left arm for a long period of time. And it turned to mush. If we aren't laboring, we aren't working, and I don't care what age we are, if we can be a Christian for 80 years, we still have to labor and strive, because if we don't, we will atrophy. So, you know, you're either moving forward or you're falling back. We're never just kind of like being in a river. You stop paddling, you're going to go the direction the river's going. You're not going to go the direction you want to go. So, you know, as Christians, we're supposed to, just like back with Timothy, spend your time on godly things. And then it goes to the congregation. Strive for godly things. Strive to live a godly life. Labor, put effort into it. You can't just come sit in the pew and say, I've worked hard my whole life.
Yeah, it's what it says, strive. How do you define strive? You actually have to work at it, don't you? It means you've got to actively participate. You can make comments anytime that says you have to strive. But anyway, you have to work at it. You have to strive. And you always, what we're told is, you know, desire the sincere milk of the word. But you can't always be fed milk, can you? You've got to continue to strive to be better and become capable of eating meat, eating the more complex issues in the Bible. You have to do that by studying, by learning. Sometimes that's kind of a hard thing to do. We all fall away sometimes, just can't seem to to have the energy to do this and that, even though we know it's the right thing to do. Question number six, let's read verses 11 and 12. Command and teach these things. You are young, but do not let anyone treat you as if you were not important. Be an example to show the believers how they should live. Show them with your words, with the way you live, with your love, with your faith, and with your pure life. Do we need to follow these instructions today? Now, these instructions were given to Timothy, but do they apply today, 2,000 years later? Sure they do. Absolutely. This is where we sometimes kind of lag behind at one time or another, but we have some examples like this. Paul is telling us today the same thing that he told Timothy 2,000 years ago. Set an example in speech. What exactly does that mean? How do we set an example in speech? What words come out of our mouth should be pure and holy? He needed to conduct himself in a proper manner too, didn't he? And this is probably hard for Timothy because he's a young man. And so he was in that area of a learning stage where he was probably going to be making some mistakes from time to time. But he had to stay firm in the faith and in his spirit. What about question 7? Timothy was given a spiritual gift. How was this accomplished? I think we looked at this a little bit in the prior lesson. All the elders there laid their hands upon Timothy. But I think that it was the Spirit that gave this prophetic statement to Timothy. Paul doesn't explain exactly how that came about, but he did talk about the Spirit being given, but the elders were laying on their hands. Primary topic is the dangers that are posed by false teachers and the responsibility of various groups within a church. Also, this group or this topic gives us a description of all the features that were in Ephesus and the practical steps to defend against it. We need to take these instructions to heart today, just as effective today, just as it was 2,000 years ago. Things have changed a little bit from 2,000 years ago to today. And so a lot of the pressures that we have to deal with, they didn't have to deal with back in those days. So in some respects, we have a lot tougher time to add these things and have these things be a part of our everyday life. Thank you, everybody, for your help on that. This lesson, Next week will be covering chapter 5, which is the next, the last chapter in this First Timothy book. Interesting last lessons are on, lesson sheets are back there on the podium back there in the back. So be sure to grab your copy of it and be ready. We'll work on it next week. So thank you, everyone. Again, God bless.